Support for Politics and Public Policy reporting on SDPB is made possible by SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's time for our weekly rundown of state politics and some of the top stories happening right now. With us, we have Dakota political junkies Jonathan Ellis and Denise Ross. Jonathan, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here, Lori.
Denise, thanks for being here as well.
I'm happy to be here as well.
Jonathan, let's start with you because big news in the farm bill this week. And as we are looking at moving that farm bill forward, you and the Argus Leader have been covering part of this about SNAP benefits for some time and sort of, transparency about those, I guess would be the word I will use. Give us an overview of that work that the Argus has been doing regarding SNAP benefits or the food stamp program.
Well, it's been a long, ongoing fight. This paper was waged starting in 2011. We filed a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit seeking to disclose how much the federal taxpayers pay to the retailers that participate in the program each year. And we've fought and fought and fought. It's been to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals twice. Most recently, we won last month. And so there are some appeals processes that are playing out this summer in that case. And as that is ongoing, industry is scurrying to find some toadies in Congress who will add language to a certain legislation that would block the disclosure of this information. So that's kind of where we're at. And yesterday, the South Dakota Retailers Association regretfully sent out an alert to its members urging them to contact Senator Thune with really some just misinformation about what our lawsuit was about.
And now have they retracted that information since then? What were they saying the lawsuit was about that was untrue?
They were telling their members that the information that would be released would be include what customers were actually buying in terms of merchandise that customers were buying with SNAP benefits. And that's information that's actually not even kept by the federal government. In fact, that's initially in 2010 what we'd sought, and we learned that that information was not kept, and so then we went after the annual sales amounts that taxpayers give to these retailers. Presumably there are some big corporations who are behind this who, they're happy to have the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program focused on, the people who use it, but they don't want taxpayers necessarily to look at the big Walmart and how many billions of dollars of taxpayer money is transferred to them every year in these programs. And so I think that's where the focus to be on the poor people who use the programs and not the big corporations that get the money at the end of the day.
What do you expect, we would know with the release of that information? How could it be useful to sort of paint that bigger picture?
There are many reasons, and over the course of this litigation, we've had many food researchers at universities, public health. I've had Mayor Bloomberg's office back when he was New York mayor contact me. They want the information because they think they can make the program better in terms of how, people living in urban and rural areas who are in food deserts, they think the information would help them make it better. I'm interested in it from a fraud perspective. I would use the data to run some metrics and look for instances of fraud. I mean, there are other just right-to-know issues in terms of who's getting the money, which big corporations are getting the money. And then that raises questions about, well, how many of their employees are using the program, too, because they're not being paid, wages sufficient to be able to afford their own food without federal aid. So there are lots of angles to what this data could be used for.
Denise Ross, any thoughts on the Farm Bill in general and how we're sort of watching it from South Dakota, what Jonathan is talking about, and the broader picture of Farm Bill legislation?
This whole food stamp, SNAP issue is curious to me because it is a wedge often that people who are opposed to social programs tend to be Republican, like to use to try, and they try to reduce the benefits and so forth. So it is curious to me why they wouldn't want this sort of transparency and this sort of information to be in the public domain. And it seems to me kind of like a no-brainer that it would be, but Jonathan's been into the weeds and knows all the ins and outs of all of this, as I do not know. As far as the broader farm bill, my thoughts tend to go to include the tariff situation, where you see a lot of farmers who live in obviously rural states who tended to support President Trump. And I'm watching that segment, the farmers, and how they're responding, not just to the tariffs, but to the farm bill and how the farm bill will shape up, and whether President Trump weighs in on any particular aspect of it, or whether he just takes what Congress sends him and signs it. It's such a big piece of legislation that it's hard for me to imagine that he wouldn't weigh in some way. But it all kind of, in my 30,000-foot view, kind of rolls together. And if farmers feel like they got a raw deal on tariffs and a raw deal in the farm bill, then, boy, that might shake things up going forward for President Trump politically.
And Jonathan, one of the concerns that farmers were expressing, you know, not too many months ago, was just, you know, omnibus tax reform bills and spending bills packages were going through Congress before the farm bill, and there were some concerns that the farm bill would, you know, sort of get gutted a little bit to pay for some of those other Republican priorities. What are your thoughts about how closely the farm bill moving forward is being watched in the state?
Oh, it's being watched very closely. In watching the Senate version of it today, there was obviously some concerns about ethanol and that production there, and Senator Grassley was angry about that. He's from Iowa. So obviously, you know, corn producers here are concerned about, you know, issues regarding, you know, not only farm safety net programs, but other issues that will affect ethanol production and things of that nature. Very closely. You know, the House obviously failed to pass its version, which of course I'm happy about, frankly, because it contained an amendment to bar the release of the information we are suing for. But you know, the Senate passed its Senate Ag Committee passed a version today. It'll go to the full floor with a vote before July 4th. And so, you know, it's possible we don't see the two chambers reconcile a bill until, well, either later this year or even next year.
Do you think that amendment for transparency, releasing that information, is going to be part of that reconciliation? Is it significant enough from the industry lobbyists that we're going to hear about in the future? Or is it dead now that was not attached to the Senate bill? I know that's a crystal ball question, but yeah,
there
sorry.
There was some language in the base bill that apparently that did pass the Senate Ag Committee today that could prohibit the release of the information. So it's up in the air right now.
All right, we'll talk about this again. Let's switch gears a little bit, and Denise, we'll start with you. Looking ahead to the conventions, we had South Dakota Democrats. Party leadership on the program yesterday. We'll visit with Republicans next week before their convention. And let's juxtapose this with a Bob Mercer column that we were reading about the rise of the independent and no party voters in the state as we go into convention. Big tangled mess there. Where do you want to start? Which thread do you want to start pulling on sweater?
Let me confess a few things. I scrambled this morning. I thought we were just going to be talking about the Democrats, but I scrambled this morning to try and find out everything I could about who they plan to nominate, and I couldn't find anything online. I tried to listen to your segment from yesterday, and my phone was being persnickety, so I only got through about half of it. I'm very interested to see who Billy Sutton nominates for his lieutenant governor. He's a Democratic gubernatorial candidate. Then we've got a race for attorney general among the Democrats. We've got very recently former U.S. Attorney Randy Seiler, who by sheer coincidence used to be my across-the-street neighbor when I was a kid in Mobridge. So I remember him as very jovial, friendly, kind of had a smile on his face all the time kind of a guy. And then we have Tatooine Means, a Lakota woman, a daughter of Russell Means, who I've heard her speak. She's very impressive. She's very professional. But she does have a bit of an edge to her when it comes to speaking about Native American rights as well. She probably should. She's very passionate about that. And so it will be very interesting to see how that race plays out and how that issue gets dealt with at that level. And I just do not know who they're planning to nominate for their other state party officials.
There was no Secretary of State candidate. And okay. Then that's all I asked, because I wasn't sure how deep that went. So we moved on to other things, but they did not have anyone at this point throw their hat in the ring for Secretary of State.
On the positive side for the Democrats, I did hear the part where she said they're having more delegates turn out than ever before in recent history anyway. So that indicates a lot of energy. And then what indicates even more energy is how many legislative candidates they have. They've often struggled to fill those slots because people, quite frankly, just didn't think they could win as a Democrat, didn't want to put all that effort and energy into something. And now you're seeing a sign of real energy at that level. And if you also turn around and look at the statistics for voter registration, the Democrats are sliding while the Republicans and the independents seem to be gaining, which is interesting to me. And then it's with all of that together, I just want to do a throwback. I was fortunate enough to interview George McGovern several times before he passed. And the most fascinating story he told me was about his time as chairman of the South Dakota Democratic Party. And it was sometime in the 1950s when he took on that job, and there were a grand total of 2 Democrats in the state legislature. So what good old George did was he went with a shoebox full of index cards from town to town to town and stopped in at retail establishments, made his pitch, said, "We're having a meeting tonight. Why don't you come and listen?" And just talked about the same thing Democrats are saying they need to keep talking about: the bread and butter issues of the economy and the status of agriculture in this state and all the kinds of things that don't get a lot of attention in the headlines. And he rebuilt that party back up from a very, very low point. And even though people like to say the Democrats are at a low point now, they're nowhere near where they were in the 1950s in this state. So I think if you can do that kind of shoe leather work, the Democratic Party might still be able to come back and be more of a factor in the state politically than it seems to be at the moment. Go ahead.
Yeah, Jonathan, I want to bring you back in the conversation. And the importance of those third-party voters or no-party voters or independent voters, however you want to characterize that, you've seen changes in Sioux Falls in voter registrations. And again, I'm referencing, Pure Politics, Bob Mercer's column right now, but I hadn't seen that until this morning. I kind of ran across it, and I didn't realize that so many independents were gaining in the city of Sioux Falls and in the state, sometimes overtaking the Democratic Party. What are your thoughts on the impact of that, even as it regards polling and trying to figure out where people stand in the race?
Well, I mean, independents are gaining, certainly in Sioux Falls and across the state. That's a trend I think that's actually nationally is also happening. I mean, and it's not really a surprise to me when you see both political parties have gone, either so far to the left or so far to the right. I know that South Dakota Democrats are trying to maybe go a little more to the center if they can, but it's not a surprise to me that when both parties have kind of drifted to their ideological extremes, that you would have people saying, "Look, neither party fit me." With regard to polling, I mean, a pollster is going to have, in a general election race, a pollster is going to have to try to come up with that right mix of voters, independents that turn out, Republicans and Democrats that turn out. So, independents are growing. I think Denise's story about George McGovern is a great one. It's a fascinating one. I'm actually looking at a picture of him right now, standing next to Adlai Stevenson when he back in that era. The Democrats have a big problem right now in that you're talking about the voter registration numbers that they have for the first time in decades dipped below 30% of all registered voters. So while they have, it's good for them that they have these legislative candidates and record number of delegates, what they need to see now is a reversal in those declines in registered voters. And that's where they'll see, that's where they have an opportunity then to start making some inroads in politics.
Denise, what kind of candidate lieutenant governor selection does Billy Sutton need to make at this point to help move him forward? Paint a broad picture of who that person, strong Democrat, strong moderate, what area does he need to, a different geographic region of the state? What's he going to look for?
Billy Sutton himself, I would describe as a moderate. And so, boy, I don't think he needs to worry about attracting Democratic voters. So perhaps another moderate. You know, it's just, that's why I'm so fascinated by that, to see who he chooses.
Right.
Somebody that would attract independents and some Republicans. I've heard of and from some Republicans who've already decided to vote for him because he is a really impressive candidate. I've been lucky to hear him speak just once, but I walked out of there saying what I thought the first time I met John Thune after he'd already been elected to Congress, and I was like, boy, this guy is good, you know? So he's got real talent. And of course, it's always the top person on the ticket that matters the most. But as far as lieutenant governor, I would look for him to nominate a woman, but I wouldn't say that's a guarantee. And beyond that, boy, I just wouldn't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see what he does.
Jonathan, any final thoughts on that before we let you go? Lieutenant governor candidate for Billy Sutton.
How much time do we have?
A minute.
No. Okay. I would just say, you know, the big concern is it somebody who can competently step into the office if the governor, something were to happen? That's the first probably thing that you want to look for. And secondly, from a political standpoint, you know, maybe he wants to look for somebody from one of the bigger cities, sort of, so you could kind of maybe have a bridge from that urban-rural divide in South Dakota, so you have those bases covered. I would not be surprised to see him nominate a woman from Sioux Falls, possibly, or from Rapid City.
Sure. Well, we will be watching. The South Dakota Democratic Convention is this weekend. Denise Ross, thank you for joining us from the Black Hills studio there. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Jonathan Ellis is on the phone from Sioux Falls. Jonathan, thanks for being here as well.
Thanks a lot, Lori.